Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of the Novel Ideas podcast.
Yeah, this is the first one that's actually going to see air, so I hope it's good.
Well, it has to be good, because we're talking about the Hunger Games.
That's true, because the Hunger Games are awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I guess if it's the first episode, then you might wonder who we are. Actually, most of you listening to the first episode probably know damn well who we are. Our vast listenership
yes.
in the future, when they're going through the archives, will, for some reason, wonder who we are, because they haven't heard the first episode yet.
Right.
So, I'm Ben Roman.
I'm Gabs Roman.
And we love books.
We love books so much that we read them
constantly.
All the time.
And then talk about them.
All the time.
All the time.
So, we kind of figured that we might as well just record basically our conversations about books that we already have all the time and see if people maybe want to listen to them.
This is like the conversation we have just sitting around, except maybe 10 to 15% more organized.
And also shorter.
Also not that much more organized.
Yeah. So the second bit that you'll probably need to know is that we have a spoiler policy for the podcast.
Here is the spoiler policy. We will spoil everything.
Every last detail.
Without a shred of remorse.
So if you're one of those people who doesn't like spoilers, thinks they ruin everything, and you have not yet read The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins, we suggest you turn off the audio now because Katniss wins The Hunger Games.
Yeah, go read the book, come back in, what, 3 or 4 hours,
and yeah.
then you can listen to this podcast if the spoilers are going to ruin it for you. We want to talk about everything that happens. We don't want to have to hold something back. And on top of that, for me, spoilers don't spoil it.
If it's a good book, then it doesn't really matter that much.
I still want to read it. There is one addendum to the spoiler policy that is important to note, since this is the first book of a series. We will spoil everything in the first book, but we won't spoil anything that happens later in the series until we talk about it.
You can basically pretend that we have not read book 2 or book 3 of the Hunger Games trilogy.
That is a lie.
A huge lie. But we won't be talking about books 2 or 3 at all.
Intentionally.
So, well, yeah, we might accidentally slip up and get a line in there. But the point is that if you've read the Hunger Games, but you haven't read Catching Fire or Mockingjay, you're safe to listen to this podcast.
All right, so let's game on.
Yeah, so The Hunger Games by Suzanne Collins. So the reason we chose this book is because the Hunger Games movie is actually coming out, I think, this week as of the time we've posted the podcast.
You can watch it midnight Thursday, unless you consider that to be Friday, because you're a weirdo.
Right, which we are doing, by the way.
We may or may not be doing.
Also, the other reason is that the books are really popular. People love them, and we really love them.
We do really love them, so we wanted to talk about them, and we hope people will want to listen to us talk about them.
We'll see. So first, let's just talk a little bit about Suzanne Collins, the author, and how she decided to write The Hunger Games in the first place.
She was watching TV, as I've heard it, and was watching, what, American Idol?
Something like that.
And flipped over to watch some coverage of the war in Iraq and suddenly went, whoa, this is kind of the same thing.
Yeah, the coverage of everything about the Iraq war kind of put on display as entertainment almost.
Yeah, infotainment.
Yes, and that shouldn't really be the case with war, should it?
I don't know, should it? Maybe it should.
I guess it depends on what they're showing.
I think pretty clearly from reading this book that Suzanne Collins does not think that should be a thing.
Yes, Suzanne Collins is very anti that. I think I read somewhere that when she grew up, her dad was actually a veteran, probably of Vietnam, possibly of World War II. I don't know how old she is, actually. But he actually would like sit down and talk to his kids about war and politics and kind of instilled her with this sense of how to approach war ever since.
Which is a little unusual, actually.
I think so.
Most war veterans do not tell war stories unless they're under a little bit of duress.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that her dad like wanted to make sure that the kids had the right views of war.
If you live through one, then that seems like a message you would want to get to people.
Right, and then, of course, the other aspect of reality TV, even if you hate reality TV and don't watch it, I'm sure everyone has at least seen one episode of American Idol or one episode of Survivor, and even if you haven't, you at least know what it is.
I mean, it's here to stay. It's definitely part of our society, and you could argue that some other things that are not usually classified as reality TV, such as election coverage or sports, are actually reality TV when you come right down to it. And those tend to be the higher rated programs. So as a society, we like them, even if many individuals do not.
Yes. Unscripted television.
Yes, unscripted.
Even though it's been proven that channels like MTV actually script their reality TV shows.
Well, on MTV, how can you tell the difference? Because their scripted shows don't sound scripted.
Oh, MTV, you are horrible. Sorry to anyone who likes MTV, I guess, but woof. So moving on, let's just talk a little bit about the overview of the book. So the genre is pretty straightforward. We have a YA future apocalyptic dystopia.
Dystopia, by the way, one of my favorite words in the world.
Do you want to explain a little bit of what dystopia entails?
All right, so to explain dystopia, I would usually assume that the person wondering about it is familiar with utopia.
Thomas More!
Thomas More! Or if not necessarily Thomas More and utopia, at least the concept of utopia. Well, it's the opposite of that. Imagine a future where everything sucks, and if you're a teenager, maybe that's all you do anyway. But imagine that it's imposed on you by society and not by your own emo impulses.
Yes, dystopia, I would say 100% of the time, includes a government that is somehow oppressing the people.
Yes. Otherwise, it's not dystopia, it's just post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, what's it called? Crapsack World,
Crapsack World
is the official title. Since everyone here has probably at least heard of the books, we're guessing you at least vaguely know the plot. But essentially, we have a teenage girl who is competing in the child murder death games put on by Big Brother government and fighting for survival.
Or I like to describe it as Lord of the Flies crossed with 1984 with a touch of Survivor thrown in for good measure.
Right, real Survivor.
Real Survivor.
If Jeff Probst was actually handing them spears to spear each other.
That would be a little weird. Probably for Jeff Probst, too.
Yeah, I don't think he would like that very much. Congratulations on your daytime Emmy or whatever. One of the things that also I'd like to point out is we have a teenage girl. The book is definitely centered around a girl. And for any of the boys out there who are dumb enough to think that they don't want to read a book that has a female protagonist.
If Ralph from Lord of the Flies is listening.
Right. Ralph. Then I would like to tell you to get over yourself because this isn't some kind of sappy, romantic, girly girl tale, which, by the way, not all girls like. Thank you very much. But it's nice to have a female protagonist who is just a protagonist and happens to be a female.
The short version is, this is not Twilight.
Yes, anyone who thinks it's Twilight plus some murder, you are going to be really disappointed.
Entertainment Weekly?
I think Stephanie Meyer actually recommended the Hunger Games books to her readers.
Yeah.
And the reason so many people get really mad by the end of the series is because the romance aspect is not as prevalent as they've been hoping.
Well, sucks to their ass, Mark.
Yeah, we don't care. So the setting of the book, it's actually in a country called Panem, but in our terms, it's United States.
The United States of America. In the future!
Yes. Post-apocalyptic event of some kind.
Not all that united anymore, actually.
Yes, and apparently millions of people have died off.
Seems implied.
I think I read that Florida and California are now underwater in this version. But I'm not 100% on that. So anyone who's a super Hunger Games fan, feel free to yell at me if I'm wrong. And particularly, we have our heroine Katniss living in District 12.
Somewhere in Appalachia, in a coal mining district. Presumably, I just picture West Virginia immediately.
Right, and I think she actually says in the book, in a place people used to call Appalachia, or the mountains, or...
Yeah, which means that Katniss is probably delivering her line something like this.
Yes, for anyone who, and I mean I'm guilty of this, of making all the characters talk like me in my head.
Oh, they all are actually me in my head. Yes. Even the women, so that's
yes. But it's important to note that everyone from District 12 will be talking in some kind of accent like this. Not exactly like that, because...
Well, probably nothing like this, because, well, let's be honest, we suck at accents.
Right. Yeah, we're probably offending everyone who lives in Appalachia. We apologize. We suck. We just wanted to bring up the point that they're not talking like Midwesterners.
Right. I've never even heard an Appalachian accent, actually. I'm totally thinking Texas, where I went to school.
Right. And I actually have some kind of admiration for Appalachia, because I read that Elizabethan England, the closest way of talking to Elizabethan English today is Appalachian.
Which is kind of cool when you think about
yes, it. Yes, I love the idea of Shakespeare being delivered that way.
I want to see Shakespeare in Appalachian accents.
this is great. But I wanted to point that out because one of the things that's nice about having the heroine from this place that people can typically consider backwoods, and even in Panem, people consider District 12 the most backwoods of all the districts, is that we have a heroine who's smart and capable and practical from this area who is not some kind of stupid hick.
Right, yeah. I mean, she has the classical hick accent, but she is certainly resourceful and thoughtful and calculating even, actually.
Right. So stop dissing people from Appalachia. We'll stop talking in our terrible accents. But just, you know, to give you an idea of what maybe it vaguely is like. Oh, we're terrible. Okay. So I guess we've already talked about Katniss some, but let's just talk about her some more.
Let's get all the way in there.
Yeah. So Katniss Everdeen.
Named after some sort of plant.
Called Katniss. Which I've never heard of.
Is apparently a thing.
But then again, I am 0% knowledgeable about the outdoors.
Yeah. I am less than 0% knowledgeable about the outdoors. Everything I say about the outdoors is actually wrong.
The trees are green.
The trees are green. It's sunny outside right now, crash of thunder. So, Katniss is very practical, as we said. Beginning at a young age, her father dies in the mines. And
when she's 10 or 11,
I think that's right. And she becomes the sole provider for her family.
Right. From the understanding is, after her father dies, her mother sinks into a deep depression, which Katniss maybe fairly, maybe unfairly resents her for. I mean, if you have severe enough depression, sometimes, you know, she probably actually could not help it. But at the same time, letting your kids starve is not the classiest move in the world.
Yeah, I tend to side with Katniss and her resentment, actually.
And I do have some sympathy for her mother, especially if the father was this epic love match and sounds like he tended to actually be mostly the provider for the family anyway.
Yeah, he's the one who taught Katniss all of her outdoor skills.
Her mother doesn't sound like she's in the best position to have helped even if she hadn't been depressed.
Yeah, well, her mother sounds like someone who would have done very well in a more normal society.
And I think we actually get the detail that she was not upper class, because in District 12 that doesn't really exist, but slightly more well off than most people.
Authentically middle class, not whatever the median is in District 12.
Right. So the other thing that her father's death and her mother's depression has done to Katniss is it's given her some trust issues.
She doesn't trust anybody, actually.
Yeah, well, except her sister Prim.
Except her sister Prim.
Who she loves and adores.
As causes her to volunteer for death, basically.
Yes, which is definitely an admirable trait of Katniss. But the way the book is narrated, entirely from Katniss's point of view, she's a very dry person. She makes maybe two jokes the entire book. If that, yeah. So, initially, she is a little hard to connect with and a little hard to like, almost.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you like the kind of protagonist who is full of banter and wit and who is just very clever all the time. And Katniss is smart and capable, but she's certainly not what you'd call clever.
No, I think there's a line in chapter one where she's talking about the cat that she didn't want around, and she says something about how she gives him entrails from animals so he doesn't hiss at her. And that line actually made me laugh. I think it was entrails, no hissing. That's our agreement.
That's our agreement.
And I was like, okay, I know who Katniss is now.
Right, because Katniss isn't making a snarky point when she says that. That's actually the agreement.
Yes, that is Katniss. The other interesting thing about Katniss is she's 16 when these books open, and she is much more adult than most 16-year-old girls.
Yeah, there's not any of the, oh, let's go find friends and hang out. There's not any of the mom and dad will provide for me, because there literally hasn't been any mom and dad will provide for me. She's had to be an adult, essentially, since she was 11.
Right, and she's not worried about romantic relationships. She specifically says that she wants to avoid them because she never wants to give birth to a child who might have to participate in the Hunger Games.
Yeah, I mean, she's her existence is basically, it boils down to two things. One, put food on the table. Put food on the table. Put more food on the table. Two, keep Prim safe.
Yes. She wants Prim to maybe get to grow up with some kind of modicum of normalcy.
Whatever that means in District 12.
Right, because the government doesn't really let you get away with what we consider normal anyway.
Everybody's hungry, for one thing. Which to modern America is hard to grasp, especially in a middle-class environment that we've been in.
Especially in a middle-class environment, I think. If you look at it, there are definitely issues of hunger in America with the poverty population. And I think some huge percentage of kids are actually living in poverty. Mm-hmm. But for people who have grown up fairly well off, we don't have any concept of what that's like.
The idea of a society where there isn't enough food for everybody, to the degree where actually only the people in charge basically get to be well fed, as opposed to our society where there's more than enough food for everybody and some people just don't have the means to get it.
Right. And that's why most of us are fat.
Right. That's the part that's hard to grasp without launching into 20 minutes of social commentary on modern America.
Right. The other thing that's weird to think about is the government is basically not providing enough food for everyone to help them stay in power.
Yeah, you would think keeping the people fed would be a good step in the right direction of not having people challenge your authority.
Yeah, but that's not really the way the capital works.
No, they're very vengeful.
Right, we get some information from Katniss that this mythical District 13, she doesn't remember because it was 74 years ago, tried to fight back against the government and was completely destroyed. And as a punishment for that, the government is now going to constantly remind the people that we're in charge, and if you try to do to us what District 13 did, we will crush you.
As we crushed District 13.
Right.
And so we're just going to keep everybody miserable all the time, and that'll teach you to rise up. Though you'd think at some point that would actually cause people to rise up.
You would think. It seems like in District 12, at least, people are so demoralized and beaten down that they just don't really think about it ever.
Right. They're focusing too much on survival to have time to think about political freedom.
Right. It's interesting to think of some of the other districts, because as far as we know, 12 is the worst off of the bad off districts.
Right.
The ones that are slightly better off, wouldn't they maybe have enough energy to fight back?
I don't know. We get some glimpses into that later.
When the book opens, we have Katniss explaining the way her life works. We have her going hunting, and we learn that today is the day of the reaping, when they choose one boy and one girl from each district to participate in the Hunger Games.
And everyone gathers in the town square, and they go to draw the names, and there's been a fair amount of explanation on how this whole lottery process works.
Yes.
Along the way, but the long and the short of it is, if you're older, your name's in there more times. If you're poorer, your name's probably in there more times. And if you're young, say you're a 12-year-old girl like Prim, your name's probably only in there once instead of, say, 40-ish times.
If you are poor, you can take out something called a tesserae, which allows you to get some extra food and grain from the government, but it also means your name gets put into the lottery an extra time, and it compounds on itself. So Katniss, for example, has her name in there how many times? Like
once for each year, plus an extra time for each year for 3 tesserae.
Plus for her sister and her mother, I think.
Right. 3 tesserae.
So 9, 12, something. I don't know. Anyway, her name's in there a lot.
Right.
But Prim gets chosen.
Sure enough, Prim is drawn. Katniss immediately volunteers. The crowd parts. She runs to the front. Very dramatic.
Yes.
And no, she can't go. I'll go. Which apparently there is some protocol for, and so it's allowed.
Right, you can actually volunteer in the place of other people. It's just that people in District 12 don't do that very much because they tend to get killed.
Yeah, District 12 has had 2 winners in 74 years.
One of them is now dead.
One of them is dead.
And the other one is Haymitch.
Yeah. Oh, Haymitch.
I love Haymitch. I feel so bad for him.
He has not had a great life.
Imagine killing 23 other kids. Well, you probably didn't kill all of them, but
right.
Witnessing the murder of many children around you, coming back home, and then every year being forced to witness the death of the next 2 kids chosen. As we know, no one has won since Haymitch won. So you can't really blame him for becoming an extreme alcoholic.
Yeah, I can see why that might become his coping mechanism.
And it feels a little unfair, and maybe he does it on purpose, that everyone across Panem kind of knows him as that wacky alcoholic, because he falls off the stage at the reaping and everyone's just laughing at him. And I'm thinking, this man's existence is actually pathetic.
Yeah,
not
maybe.
Funny.
Maybe he would have been better off not winning the games, but that wouldn't leave us with much of a story now, would it?
Right. The other character we get introduced to in this chapter is Effie Trinket.
Effing Trinket, I might say. She is, I don't know if she's 100% clueless, but she's definitely 99% clueless.
She's not very on top of things.
She is she's representative of the capital. Definitely.
Definitely.
All soft and not thinking of the survival concerns of citizens in the districts, and very self-absorbed, actually.
And she's so involved in the games that she doesn't really realize, well, no one from the Capitol really realizes the truth that these 23 kids are getting murdered every year. She's just thinking, keep everything on schedule. Isn't this lovely?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's so good to see that the tributes from District 12 have manners this year.
I'm so glad you know how to eat with silverware.
I keep getting saddled with all of these losers who make me look bad and clownish. Yeah, well, maybe that and your pink wig.
Maybe that. Although on some level...
Though in the capital, that's not that clownish.
No, it's really not. And Effie, I mean, for all her kind of horribleness, because if you're from the capital, you kind of are default horrible, even if you don't really know it.
You are raised to horribleness without knowing that's what you've been raised to.
Right. She's kind of cluelessly endearing at times. She tries.
She does try.
She's not outright mean.
Yeah, she's not actually callous. Again, she's more just self-absorbed.
Right. And she tries to be helpful and cheerful and thinks what she's doing is the thing to do. So she's more a product of her environment than actually a bad person.
Yeah. Well, she's maybe less a character and more just another glimpse into how this society is stacked up.
Mm-hmm. So the other tribute from District 12 is our good friend PETA Malark. Well, I say our good friend as in the reader's good friend, not Katniss's good friend.
No, they do have a little bit of history, but none recent. He's a baker.
Well, the baker's son.
He's the son of a baker. He frosts cakes, apparently.
Apparently.
Is as strong as an ox.
Apparently.
Apparently.
I think he picks up 50-pound bags of flour. 100-pound. 100-pound, tosses them around.
That's right, toss that stuff around. Make you into big moose of a man.
Why do you need 100 pounds of flour?
That's how it's delivered. It comes in 100-pound sacks.
Does it really?
I don't know.
Oh, he's making something up. I was like, is that actually how flour works?
Haven't you ever gone to Costco and bought a 100-pound bag of flour?
Can't say that I have.
I have a lot of cookies to make.
If I was in the Hunger Games, I'd have my 2-pound bag of flour and be like, eh. And then just get murdered.
She'd throw it. It would fly 2 feet straight up and hit her in the face.
Probably. I would get murdered so fast in the Hunger Games.
For the record, me too.
Oh, wow. Sometimes when I was reading it, I was thinking about that. If I just tried to immediately run into the woods and save myself, I would probably still get killed.
Yeah.
Or starve.
I mean, I could run and throw and had some physical skills when I was a teenager, but I would have been dead of dehydration in 2 days, so
right.
It wouldn't have mattered.
Where's the water?
I don't know how to find water. May I just go back to the lake and, oh god, a spear.
Well, maybe that's for the best.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Maybe just step off your pad and let the mind blow you up. Don't even.
I think what is for the best is that we never had to face that particular horror.
Yes. And that that means we're still around to be able to talk.
To be able to snark about books.
Yay. The other thing we know about PETA, aside from the fact that he's the baker's son, is that at some point in the past, it was after Katniss's father had died, and her family was starving. She was wandering around looking for scraps of food she could possibly bring home. At this point, she hadn't decided to escape the fence and become a hunter yet. PETA showed her a little bit of compassion by burning, purposefully, as far as we know, burning some loaves of bread and then throwing them out at his mother's instruction and actually throwing them at Katniss.
Yeah, and that to her was the hope that allowed her to go on and, okay, so we can do this. We can live through this. And so the incident kind of illustrates PETA's generous nature. And Katniss, again, that fiercely independent, rugged streak of hers, she just kind of comes away from it. She always remembers the episode, and with really mixed feelings, though, because she doesn't want to owe anybody anything.
Right, she feels like she has to pay PETA back somehow, and she doesn't like that. Especially now that they're going to be competing against each other.
Where, effectively, they are going to be killing one another.
Right. Is she going to pay him back by murdering him?
Right. I mean, that's that's the big thread for the up through training, pretty
mm-hmm.
much, is her keep thinking, oh, I don't want to be too friendly with this guy. We don't want to get too close because in a few days we're going to be trying to murder each other.
Right. And her trust issues pop up again because she's constantly suspecting him of being friendly. And it should be noted from the get-go, PETA's super friendly and remains super friendly the entire book. He's just kind of a general friendly dude.
He's the nice guy.
Yes, and I hesitate to use the term nice guy because it has implications of creepy romantic feelings,
well,
which he actually kind of has.
Maybe it's more accurate than
Does
you thought.
Does he expect Katniss to return his love?
He certainly hopes she will.
The romance. Do you want to talk about the romance?
Do you want to jump to the romance?
Yeah, why not?
Why the hell not?
So we have this forced romance. PETA apparently has been in love with Katniss since childhood, and part of the reason he's so nice to her, we think, is maybe because of that. He announces it to the entire Capitol to create a good deal of drama, because now we have this lovers at odds thing going on.
Trying to drum up drama for the games. It creates a storyline. It's been part of their strategy as well, is to appear friendly as the star-crossed lovers. It's just that one of them is playing a part, and
right.
One of them is not.
And I think Katniss isn't entirely sure whether PETA just did this for the crowd or whether he actually has feelings for her. She's super conflicted about it. And it brings up these issues because it works really well, actually, as a strategy. The Capitol eats
it
up.
Oh, man, the Capitol is in love with this couple from District 12.
Yeah, they think PETA is the greatest thing ever, and they go bananas.
Yeah, well, and he even, his sincerity, or appearance of sincerity, even helps to offset a little bit Katniss's pretty much lack of social graces.
Yeah, poor Katniss is so straightforward and practical, like we said, that she doesn't really know how to ham it up, how to be charming, and that's an issue when half of the Hunger Games is about being charming to a large audience.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to survive, then you want to be popular, because you'll have sponsors who will send stuff into the arena for you.
Mm-hmm. And you can kind of actually, this is part of where I saw the American Idol tie-in, is that the Capitol isn't voting on who kills who, like you vote on who gets to stay in American Idol, but contestants who get made up and are really personable and fun and friendly tend to stay in the competition, even if they're not good singers.
Right. Yeah.
There have been seasons where really phenomenal singers actually get kicked off early because they're not as charismatic as other people who aren't as good at singing. It reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, there is an element of that in The Hunger Games. Though, that being said, in The Hunger Games, you will stay in the competition longer if you just kill that more charismatic person.
Right. You can be the surliest SOB in the world and still win the games.
See career candidates.
Yes. So, we have this romance. It's going to help Katniss out. It's going to help PETA out. Katniss is not too jazzed about it, but she goes along with it. And it kind of brings up all these weird issues, because now we have this romance that's forced on them by the Capitol. Katniss, if she calls PETA out on it and says, no, we're not in love, then she's hurting her chance of getting sponsors, so she might as well go with the flow, even if she doesn't really want to. It's a little icky.
A little bit. I mean, at this point, she's playing a part more than she's committing to anything. The creepier part happens later.
Yes.
But, so she's having her issues. She's struggling with this fake romance, and underneath that, with whether she actually wants to be friends with PETA in any real sense. And they have a conversation on the roof, actually, where you get to see a little bit more deeply into PETA's character.
If he dies, he wants to die on his own terms.
Yes, he is a little... There's a little more to this guy than the big, strong baker's son who's...
Friendly man.
Friendly and generous, and who apparently has a thing for her. But he wants to go out on his own terms. He wants to kind of show the Capitol that they don't get to control everything.
Right, which Katniss does not get right away.
She hasn't even been thinking about anything remotely along those lines.
And I mean, part of that is that her character, she's, I don't want to say she's not deep, but she's not a great thinker. She doesn't sit around and ponder morality and...
She can be forced to be deep. She can be forced to be a thinker, but it doesn't come naturally to her. She's more of a... She thinks more strategically.
Right, so she's going into the She's going into the Hunger Games thinking, how am I going to get out of this? Whereas PETA's going and saying, well, I might not make it out, so how can I go out making a statement?
How can I stick it in Big Brother's eye?
Right. Stick it in their eye. So let's talk about the Hunger Games.
Oh, are there Hunger Games in the Hunger Games?
In fact, there are.
Wow, okay. So everyone's dumped into the arena and, well, they don't all disperse, but they all should have.
They really should. Apparently the first day is always the bloodiest, and you kind of wonder, why doesn't everyone who's not a career tribute just go running in the opposite direction? But I guess a lot of kids figure, might as well try to get supplies. And you never know. A certain number of those kids might say, hey, if I run into the center toward the cornucopia, someone's going to kill me, and then I don't have to worry about it anymore.
I guess if you think you're tough enough to win and you trust your offense, then maybe you just go for it.
Yeah.
You have a lot potentially to gain by going to the middle, even though about half of the field is going to be dead at the end of the initial scrum.
Mm-hmm. And Katniss manages to make it away. She witnesses a boy getting speared or knifed or something.
I think it was knifed because she almost got knifed right after that.
Right, but she managed to block herself.
Take it in the backpack and disappear into the woods, which is home turf for her.
Right, and this initial battle at the cornucopia, the first time I read the book, just shocked the hell out of me because this is YA fiction. This is intended for teenagers, and all of a sudden you're witnessing multiple kids murder each other.
Yeah, hello.
That's intense. That's kind of a ballsy move.
Yeah. And even some of the things that you aren't witnessing, like she says, don't step off the metal disc early, because saw that happen 1 year and blew someone's legs clean off.
Right, they had to scrape up bits of them.
That's pretty graphic.
Yes, it is very graphic and very dark. Even just the fact that we know that Katniss's dad got exploded in a mining accident, it brings up the darkness right away, but I will say that Suzanne Collins brings it.
She does. She will make you scrape the bloody gibbets off of yourself.
Yeah, she is not afraid to describe some pretty horrendous things. By the way, the game makers are some of the most effed up people in the world.
Yeah, the people who actually design these games to make them entertaining as possible and read as violent as possible, because that's apparently the crowd's favorite part, is people dying as horribly as possible. So they drop all these kids into an arena. In fact, the premise doesn't even matter. That's not even the game makers. That was someone else.
Right.
But they set up this treasure trove in the middle to ignite this initial burst of combat, and then they have later fire traps set up, launching fireballs, burning down a bunch of the forest to force everybody in one general direction, so again, they have to fight.
Right, they've included tracker jackers in the arena, which are these forms of genetically mutated wasps that have some kind of hallucinatory poison. So when they sting you, you basically go insane.
Yeah.
Or die.
Hurts more than average. Can kill you more readily than normal wasps can.
They're able to control the temperature in the arena, make it super cold at night or super hot during the day.
And they do.
They're able to control the water flow. They, so far as we hear, are able to... Sometimes they put in poisonous food, trying to tempt people to... You know, try not to starve to death and then
basically,
die horribly.
Basically, a game maker is a professional son of a bitch.
Yeah, professional sociopath. It's
professional sociopath, yeah.
They are...
How can we kill people? Actually, they don't even want to kill people, which Katniss mentions during the Fireball episode, their goal isn't to have one of their traps kill a tribute, though every few years one will, just to remind them it's possible.
Right.
Their goal is actually to manipulate the other players into killing each other.
Yeah, so the Fireball incident, well, first of all, they're reminding Katniss, ha-ha, fire. But then at the same time, they're trying to make all the tributes come out of their hiding places and fight each other. And it's implied that any time the tributes try to just stay away from each other, they're going to come up with something to make sure that they can't.
Yeah, they try as much as possible to drive them apart. Though that being said, it is allowable to ally.
Yes.
Though the nature of the alliance is obviously short-term.
Right. So the career tributes, which are the tributes from 1, 2, and 4.
The rich kids.
Right. The one the districts that tend to ally with the capital year-round. Train for the Hunger Games, volunteer for the Hunger Games, and tend to team up with each other to get rid of everyone else, and then I guess just turn on each other and go to town.
I guess that must be what happens at the end.
And the thing about the career tributes is it's actually pretty messed up if you think about it. Katniss basically views them as enemies, which you can't really blame her for, because these are highly trained kids who we actually see take some pleasure in murdering people.
They've been training since they were very young to kill people. These are the districts where people volunteer routinely.
Yeah, and so it makes sense that Katniss might think of them as an enemy, even though if you really think about it, they're just a kid being forced to kill other kids as well. But I would think that maybe being trained for years at a time to enter the Hunger Games might just warp you in general.
If you are training to be a murder machine at some point, maybe you just start being a murder machine.
So I think it makes some degree of sense that the careers are actually kind of horrible people. Because on some level you think, oh, a bunch of 12 and 18-year-olds forced to murder each other. This is awful. And it is. But to some degree, the careers aren't... well, they're victims of their circumstance, but they're not 100% victims in the fact that they go in with a pretty good shot at getting out of there.
Right. Most years, one of those tributes is the winner.
Yeah, unless some other wily district manages to figure something out.
Right. Someone outsmarts you unexpectedly.
So the careers are just kind of your typical bad guys, and I think one of their purposes in the book is to give Katniss some sort of antagonist in the arena, so it's not just 100%... oh my gosh, I can't kill anybody. At least she has a couple people going after her, so she can kind of do the good guy thing of self-defense.
You gotta set it up, right. So, you know, the first couple kills at least kind of deserve it as much as anyone in this circumstance deserves
right.
it.
Right.
You know, like she gets treed by a group of the career tributes and drops a Tracker Jacker nest on their heads, which, you know, actually ends up getting her stung a couple times mm-hmm. too, but it kills off a couple of them.
And it keeps her from getting
killed.
And
it keeps her, which more to the point, because that is, once again, going back to her pre-games life, her number one objective is just survive, survive, survive.
And the other big kill she makes is killing the boy from District 1 or 2, I can't remember which one.
I think it was District 1.
In response to him killing Rue.
Well, maybe now is a good time to talk about
exactly.
Rue.
Exactly. Hear that transition?
That's right. And actually, this is as good a time as any to mention District 11, which we alluded to briefly earlier as well, which is agricultural, much bigger than District 12.
Right. District 12 has a population of about 8,000?
8,000 was the number.
And as far as we understand it, I think it's the smallest district in addition to being the poorest. But the agricultural district is huge, which makes sense because they have to make food for everybody.
Right, and even they are underfed, which I think is the point I wanted to mention earlier. Because even though they're out there tending the crops, if you actually take any of them home with you, that's stealing and you'll be whipped or possibly shot. And they feed them a little more at harvest time, so they can go longer, and
I definitely got vibes of slavery.
Yes, absolutely.
This, you go out and do all the work, but if you take anything, we're going to beat the crap out of you, and you live off of what we give you. It very much felt like a sort of American South slavery situation.
Yeah, and again, you have this vengeful government. Like, they're not even just straight oppressive. 1984, people mostly had enough food to eat.
Mm-hmm.
It's just every element of their life was monitored. Here, you have what the government gives you and nothing more.
And District 12 is a pretty prominent district because they provide food for everyone. And so Rue says, whippings are a regular thing. They make constant demonstrations of their power. Whereas District 12 has gotten away with a little bit flying under the radar because people just view them as backwoods hicks.
Yeah, they're not monitored as closely. They're just kind of, well, their lives suck, so that's good enough. That's our goal.
Mm-hmm.
Do our citizens' lives suck outside the Capitol? All right, we're good.
And this is how Katniss... Rue is really the vehicle through which Katniss starts really realizing everyone has it just as bad as me. It's not just District 12. And also really starts realizing, wow, the Capitol really is terrible. And she knew some of that to a degree before, you know, since she has to compete in the Hunger Games. She would be 100% clueless not to at least realize that. But Rue talking about her own living conditions really, really helped drive the point home to Katniss that the Capitol is screwing us all over.
Right. And the Capitol is, I mean, no one she's known has had great love for the Capitol, but now she hears about this, where they should have food, they're still hungry. And plus this very sweet 12-year-old girl now who is being forced into the same arena with, I mean, other children, but boy, there sure is a big difference between 12 and 16.
Yes, especially if you're a small 12-year-old and a highly trained 16-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically a girl who should have no chance, but who actually does pretty well, all things considered.
She does do pretty well. And the other point that should be noted about Rue, aside from the fact that she's clever and resourceful, is she's basically a stand-in for Prim.
Right, she reminds Katniss of Prim in almost every way, except for the, except Rue is more courageous.
Yeah, I think Rue does much better than Prim would have done.
Yeah, makes a point of, oh, well, when it's time to face the tough stuff, Rue goes right in, and Prim mostly doesn't, unless it's an injured person.
So, we have Rue's able to leap around in the trees, but she's largely innocent, and she and Katniss make a pretty natural alliance. Katniss is a little leery of this just because she's afraid of the idea that she might have to be the one who kills Rue, which she really does not want to do. But the problem gets solved for her.
Yeah, you know, actually, if Suzanne Collins' idea was just to make this story totally grimdark and personally traumatic, then it actually would have been worse if the two of them had been the last two standing.
Right.
Not that what happens isn't dark enough, but they come up with a plan to get the careers down onto the level of everybody else by destroying their food supply because, well, what do Katniss and Rue specialize in? Gathering their own food.
Right, and the careers, they just kind of rely on the supplies they get from the cornucopia, so take that away from them, and now they have to worry more about their own survival.
And so they successfully destroy the career's supplies. And when Katniss tracks Rue back down, she's caught in a net.
Speared
through the belly. Katniss puts the guy who speared her down with an arrow through the throat. And Rue dies in Katniss's arms. This is really kind of a turning point, I think.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Prior to Rue's death, they had been connecting. Certainly Katniss was being drawn out, like the warmer part of her was there, and she was bringing someone inside her circle of trust, really for the first time in the whole book. And here she's singing for her, builds a bed of flowers,
Yeah, it covers her in flowers.
Before the body is taken away.
And Katniss witnesses this, or not witnesses, sorry, considers this action of covering her with flowers as a kind of F you to the Capitol. The Capitol has to come and collect the tribute's bodies once they die. And her decorating with flowers and showing respect to another contestant is saying, see, we don't all have to hate each other.
Yeah, it makes it less okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you were watching at home, then maybe that would make you think.
Yeah, watching a 12-year-old girl get murdered, hopefully for everyone, would be horrifying. The Capitol, you know, again, they're probably just, yay!
Woohoo!
But then being forced to watch, you know, Katniss sing to her and then cover her in flowers might make you go, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, and this is where Katniss really starts to hate the Capitol, I think.
She finally seems to connect all of the dots and really go, okay, it's the Capitol.
Right, the real enemy is the Capitol, which is pretty much what we decided when we were talking about who the antagonist might be.
Right, it's the Capitol.
It's the Capitol. I actually argued that the career tributes are not antagonists. They're almost just part of the setting. Like, if you're in a dangerous environment that might kill you, then part of this dangerous environment happens to be large teenage boys with spears and stuff.
Right, and again, like we were talking about earlier, they're a product of the Capitol having the Hunger Games in the first place.
Right, so they wouldn't exist. Well, whole games wouldn't exist without the Capitol.
Right, and those kids probably would have gotten to grow up not being crazy murderers. So, better all around. One of the things I actually wanted to mention with Katniss taking Rue in under her wing and her love for Prim is a lot of people accuse Katniss, well, not a lot, I shouldn't say that, but I've read places that people accuse Katniss of being too much of a masculine hero, that she's kick-ass, but she has all these stereotypically masculine traits associated with her. And so she doesn't make a very good female heroine because of that. And I think that's kind of crap anyway, because women can hunt and provide and be badasses.
If you're an action hero, if you're in an environment where you have to live, then what you have to be is practical. And if you think that being practical is a masculine trait, I really think that says a lot more about you than it says about the character that you're criticizing.
Right, but this love for Prim and Rue, I think, allows you to see that Katniss isn't just some kind of machine. She does care about people, and she does love people, and if you really, really want to put gender label stereotypes on everything, well, that's a typically female trait, is being emotionally caring and maternal toward people. And Katniss is emotionally caring and maternal toward two different people in the books. So guess what? She's a mix of both.
Wow, snap.
Damn.
Feminism.
I really had to get that off my chest, because I get so annoyed by people who claim that she can't be a feminine hero. Well, you know what? I would hope that I could act that way if I was in that situation, and if someone called me out for being too masculine, I'd probably punch them in the face.
Right. If somebody's coming at you with a spear, what's a traditionally feminine response to that supposed to be? Talking to them about your feelings?
Right, and I hate that idea that, you know, this traditional idea of femininity that white European males projected onto women is somehow a standard that heroines have to live up to some degree. Why can't we just let people and characters be characters?
Let people be people.
Right. You know? So that's the point I wanted to make there. Let's go ahead and talk about the romance in the cave a little bit, since we hinted at it earlier.
Okay.
by the way, this is the worst part of the book.
It's boring. It's a tepid romance.
And it's, like I said, it's a little problematic and creepy in the
consent
fact...
Consent issues.
Yeah, Katniss is doing it to keep them alive. So she's basically allowing Peeta to kiss her just to stay alive, which is a little creepy. And PETA actually has feelings for Katniss and thinks she probably returns them, so he's kind of unknowingly forcing romance on her, which is kind of creepy.
Yeah. Again, the bad guy is the Capitol.
Yeah.
For putting him in this situation.
Really not cool. And the fact that they hang out in a cave for a week while it rains is...
a little Twilight-y?
But Katniss is way more interesting than Bella, and PETA is way less abusive than Edward. So
yes and yes, to the nth degree.
But it is boring like Twilight. Oops, sorry Twilight Uh-oh. Fans. We'll get to that one day.
We'll get to our angry email later.
Right, and so PETA and Katniss team up because there's this rule change that... maybe they'll accept two winners from the same district. So what else is Katniss going to do but go hunt PETA down? He's been wounded severely. She has to go get medicine to help him out. He helps her when she gets wounded. And then we kind of have all this kissing in between.
Yeah, mostly guided by Haymitch sending them gifts every time they... take a step forward in the relationship.
Right, Haymitch is sending Katniss these signals as, I'll send you food if you keep hamming up the romance so the Capitol people keep being invested.
Because they love it!
Yeah, they love it! And Katniss is going, well, okay.
I guess if that's what I gotta do, that's what I gotta do.
So, that part's, again, pretty dull.
The slowest stretch of the book by far is the week in the cave.
And part of that has to do with the fact that the way the book is written, Suzanne Collins is pretty excellent at all the action scenes. Those are super gripping, all the cliffhangers. I mean, you just read through the book. Very just awesome, exciting read.
Yeah, both times I've read this book, I did so in a single sitting.
But Suzanne Collins' strong point in writing is not having characters ponder and talk. So I think that's part of what makes it not as exciting.
I think so. There aren't a lot of really introspective moments. Like, there are flashbacks. That's kind of how she achieves that, by having stuff happening just not right now. And when not much is actually happening, then the... prose isn't always quite up to the task.
Yeah, so that part would have maybe been nice to see some kind of editing or change. The thing that I will say that I like about the Katniss PETA team up, aside from the kind of creepy overtones, is first of all, their portmanteau couple name is either Cat Pee or Penis. So that's awesome.
like, click.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about the two of the Cat Pee.
Didn't think about that.
Yeah, it's so beyond excellent. But the other thing I kind of like about the team up is that PETA, for all his strength and his nice guy-ness, Katniss is really the one who is keeping him alive. We have a role reversal here. Instead of the big strong man taking care of the woman, Katniss is taking care of PETA. When they're going hunting, she makes a note that he's basically just blundering.
He's such a bad hunter.
Yeah, he just doesn't get it. He's even bad at gathering fruit, because he's the one who ends up collecting the nightlock that kills Foxface.
That's true. Hey, here's what you need to do. Go gather. Hey, I got us some berries for dessert. Okay, these are poison.
PETA, you're a little worthless.
It's so adorable that you're trying. But please sit here and don't move. You ruin everything.
Right, so...
and then, I want to sleep in the cave. God!
Yeah!
Get in the fucking tree.
PETA should really be listening to Katniss. I almost wish... I mean, she has to humor him because of the romance aspect, you know?
Right.
So she can't just be like, shut up, fucktard, get in the tree. Because then the Cap will be like, wait a minute.
If it wasn't for his leg.
But I like that conflict. And I like Katniss. I know we keep bringing this up, but I'm a little perturbed at all the people who don't like Katniss.
I also like Katniss. And I know I keep bringing... I've said this word probably 1,000 times already in this cast, but... she's very practical, and I like that in fictional characters, actually, because so many fictional characters are not even remotely practical.
Yeah, she's not a character you ever have to scream at. The only thing that ever is bad about Katniss is she doesn't realize that PETA is actually in love with her, and you just want to, like, shake her and be like, woman!
Pay attention! If Katniss was in a zombie movie...
Oh, she'd be...
She would not be going back for anyone who fell down.
No, she'd be... PETA would hurt his leg and fall down, and she'd be like, meh, keep running.
Leave him! Or the person with the bite, she wouldn't be waiting for him to turn. She'd be like,
no.
Go outside.
Sorry.
Get out.
You're going to die.
If you want, I'll put an arrow through you.
Yes. So, gotta say, like in the Katniss.
But, kinda, the water all dries up.
Which the Game Makers have done purposefully.
Yeah, and so they're all driven to the center where the lake is, because they need water, and there are only three of them left at this point. Katniss, PETA, and Kato, a murderous...
Career tribute.
Career tribute from District 2, I think.
Or 1.
No, because the one from 1 got shot through the throat with an arrow.
They're all the same.
They're all the same. Oh, let's treat them the same. So Kato is dead. No, he's alive. And actually, he comes sprinting past them out of the woods towards the cornucopia, which is the high ground.
Right.
Which should probably be a sign that something really bad is probably behind you right now.
Yeah, you would almost think that if one of these guys who's been trained his entire life to murder people runs past you without murdering you, you should probably run without waiting to see what's happening.
And they turn to see what's happening and OMG wolves.
So,
well,
they run.
Giant mutant wolves. That can apparently stand on their hind legs
and kind of talk to each other.
They have some degree of communication, yeah.
And this is actually the zombie situation a little bit, in which they're running away and Pete is held up because of his leg. Katniss can't leave him behind because the cameras are on her. I mean, also, if they kill Kato, both of them win, so that'd be kind of a dick move. But if that had been happening with no cameras, Katniss might have been like, oh, sorry, PETA.
And she helps him, but more in the way of shooting things off of him than going back
and
dragging his slow ass. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so these last mutations, I couldn't decide if they creeped the hell out of me or if I thought they were really cheesy, because they do one and then the other. Because you have a big wolf, stands up on its hind legs, gestures for the others to follow it with its arm, and I go, ooh. And I go, oh, wait, werewolves? Really? Werewolves? How does this fit into future dystopia? And then they turn out to have traits of all the dead tributes, and I went, bleh, again.
Yeah, the mutts kind of creep me out. The fact that they have the eyes of the dead tributes is pretty messed up.
Yeah.
Although they don't seem to have any of the memories or characteristics of the dead tributes.
As far as we know.
Which would hopefully help you kill them off more easily. But I still think it would be... I think this is... It is a physical attack, but it's more of a psychological attack.
Yeah, as much as anything.
Like, what do you think we did with the dead tributes? And you can imagine the game makers, you know, like, rubbing their cats and laughing. While Katniss is, like, freaking out. Oh my god, there's one with Rue's eyes!
Look at her squirm, Fluffy.
I mean, Katniss freaks at that. So, Kato decides, now that we're safe, I might as well kill you guys. And they manage to knock him off the cornucopia. And instead of the mutts just taking care of him in short order, he actually screams in agony all night while they chew at him.
Yeah, they eat his face off, but they don't just finish him off. Which is really the polite thing to do if you're ever a mutant wolf.
Right. Or, you know, Katniss maybe didn't think about it, and maybe at night didn't have her night vision goggles anymore, couldn't see him. But, you know, it might be nice to kill him before he gets gnawed on by wolves for 10 hours straight.
If you have the ability to, yes. She finally does.
She does. And we have this twist that you probably could have predicted, because the game makers are dicks. that, oh no, only one tribute can survive. Sorry, guys.
Sorry, guys. So, go ahead and murder each other, star-crossed lovers. And Katniss's immediate reaction is, well, I don't want to murder him, but I don't want him to murder me. And so, points an arrow at his face as her very first act.
And then goes, oh.
And then goes, oh, because he was actually drawing his knife to not kill her.
Yeah.
Oops.
So Katniss realizes the best way to do this is maybe she did read Shakespeare in school, because she decides double suicide.
It fixes everything.
Right. They did it at the end of Romeo and Juliet, right?
That's right. For all of you listening at home, if you're ever in trouble, kill yourself.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
That's terrible advice.
That's really bad advice.
Actually, never do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah. So the two of them decide double suicide, and Katniss is actually hedging a bet that the Capitol won't let both of them kill themselves, because then they'll have no winner, and it's kind of like an FU to the Capitol again, like, we refuse to kill each other, so we'll just kill ourselves. And so they both make it out, and apparently that really pisses the Capitol off.
They are not happy.
Yeah, we get this kind of looming threat, which is resolved to the point that the Capitol decides not to, you know, do something horrible to Katniss by the end, but by the fact that they probably will do something horrible to her in the next book.
They will undoubtedly do something horrible to her in the next book. So we get to more or less the end of the story, and they're heading for home, and she has this specter of the Capitol causing harm to her family over her head, and also admitting to PETA that, oh, by the way. Not in love, dude.
Don't think I am. I don't know.
Sorry.
I'm so confused.
Sorry. Been an emotional few weeks.
And then PETA, well, you know, he kind of gets his heart broken, but he's a little bit of a dick. But
understandably, but not fairly.
You saved my life?
Right.
God. Stupid.
How could you? How could you save my life and then make me cry?
She's like, really, PETA?
Really?
A little bit.
You'd rather be dead?
A little bit of a dick there. It should be noted that I do like PETA, but sometimes he needs to, like, get over himself a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's one of those moments.
And after the first book, you still don't really know him all that deeply, I think.
She spends most of the games by herself, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I just want to talk really quick about the relevance of the book in today's society. We already talked a little bit about how everyone's really familiar with reality TV. For anyone who knows any history at all, the Hunger Games are kind of also based off of this historical idea of gladiator matches in ancient Rome.
It'd be pretty hard to miss that if you'd ever heard of the Roman Colosseum.
Yes. If you've ever seen the movie Gladiator, I have a lot of issues with the historical accuracy.
Or Spartacus.
But the basic idea of slaves having to fight each other to the death while thousands of people watch on cheering is true. That did happen. And people loved it.
Hooray!
Which is messed up.
Hooray, Romans! Not our family.
Yes. So, but if you think about it, you know, in today's world, we love watching people compete with each other, not to the point of death, but you kind of wonder if we could lapse over into that.
I mean, we watch reality shows where people are hungry and tired and exhausted and sometimes get injured, and we love our NFL football in this country.
The NFL is so popular in America, and it's a violent sport.
The highest rated show on television every year is the Super Bowl.
And NFL playoffs are always right behind it.
The highest rated show many weeks during the NFL season is one of the primetime football games. Not one of the scripted dramas, not one of the reality shows. And it kind of struck me that it's not really a true debate at this point, at least, anymore. But the whole concussion issue in the NFL and how when rule changes are introduced or just speculated upon that might reduce the violence in the game somewhat to prevent severe injuries, that a large portion of the fan base and almost all of the players actually start complaining. What are you doing? You're making this thing safer. But why don't we just not even wear helmets and play touch football instead?
Yeah, I like watching 300-pound men beat the crap out of each other. I love football.
Yeah, I love football.
But that's... You can, you know, say football is just giant guys smacking each other.
I like running and jumping. I like the collisions. But I don't like seeing someone lie on the field unconscious. And I'm willing to have fewer collisions if that means these guys can live past 55.
Right. And football players, I mean, they really do deal a lot with horrible injuries. And obviously, NFL football is more humane than the Hunger Games. Like, 100%.
Yes. As a matter of scope, there's a huge difference here.
We're not trying to say that. But you can kind of think, well, if we love watching people bash each other into the ground, how far are we from the Hunger Games?
I do think there is some potential for that hunger for violence within our society, actually. To me, it's a plausible future.
It's a parting thought for you. Questions for the series. We wonder, what's the Capitol going to do to Katniss? What is even going to happen in the next book? Is Katniss going to have to mentor some children?
Because that would probably suck.
Yeah. Is Katniss going to end up with PETA?
Is Katniss going to resolve her romantic tension?
Oh, wait. We don't actually care about that.
No, actually, now that you mentioned it, I don't care about that. What's going to happen with the Capitol and the districts? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get worse?
I might ask myself, are Katniss and PETA going to be able to become friends, like make up and realize that they're, you know...
Yeah, maybe get along a little.
They have something in common.
Was Thresh actually Slingblade? Sorry. Couldn't help myself.
Why couldn't Thresh speak in complete sentences?
What's up with that? He's like, you help girl, I like girl, I like you, and then fucking brain someone with a rock!
Suzanne Collins, please write The Hunger Games from the point of view of Thresh. Because what the hell is going on with Thresh?
He seems like a fascinating young man.
I save you for a girl. Of what? Are you like a caveman? Why is Rue so well spoken and you like weird caveman? Makes no sense.
They go to different schools? Maybe she went to private school.
Yeah, I'm sure her parents could afford that.
Right.
So, anyway, we really like the book. Hopefully you can tell that through our conversation, and we definitely recommend it. Especially, you should read it before you go see the movie if you haven't read it already.
Yes, you should, because we did. And we're going to go see the movie as soon as it is possible to see the movie.
Yes.
And we are going to geek out.
And then probably...
And probably make angry Twitter posts when it's over.
How dare you do that?
What?
I have seen from the promotional material that they are at least making Rue black. So thank God for that. Oh. Thank you, Hollywood, for not making Rue white.
But whitewashing...
is horrible.
Is horrible. I'll miss it.
No.
I won't miss it.
Okay. So anyway, that's basically our thoughts on the book. If you want to get in contact with us, we do have a handy-dandy website, novelideaspodcast.com.
Yes, or you can contact us directly by email, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
Or if you like the Twitter sphere, you can go ahead and follow us or tweet us at novelideaspod.
That's just novelideaspod. There was not room for the cast.
Yes, and we would love to hear your thoughts, suggestions, comments. Do you think we're just 100% wrong about Katniss and she's actually horrible? Do you hate us for trying to do Appalachian accents and think we should get flogged for that?
If you do, we will respond in our version of the capital accent.
Yes.
Which we never got to.
Which will be way more
helpful. Maybe we'll do it briefly.
Maybe we should close the podcast out by doing our capital accent.
All right, I think so. So what are you reading right now?
Oh, God, don't stop. I'm reading Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. It's kind of a classic of American literature by now, written by a black author in the 1930s, I think. And it's kind of about black people living in the South and them dealing with the aftermath of the Civil War to a degree and the racism to a degree. And it's focused around one woman who's trying to figure out how race plays into things and also how men and women interact. There's a lot of gender conflict going on in the book. So.
Sounds smarter than anything I've read recently. I myself just read Tunnel in the Sky, a classic Heinlein YA novel. That's Robert Heinlein, though. I can't imagine anyone on the internet doesn't know who that is by now. And it is, I'm reasonably certain, a response to Lord of the Flies, as was published exactly 1 year later, and shares a lot of DNA with it, except that this is a mixed group of young folks who are, you know, 16 instead of 9, and they actually managed to build a little bit of society. And I've started rereading Terry Pratchett's Color of Magic earlier today, a really fun satirical look at the world of fantasy. If you don't know the Discworld series and you like it when every sentence in the book is some sort of tongue-in-cheek joke, then I highly recommend that series. And I am still slogging away at Noam Chomsky's Conquest, or Year 501, The Conquest Continues, which, again, might be slightly relevant to the politics of this book.
Before stuff like that's pretty relevant. So that's it for our first episode. Again, please come find us at novelideaspodcast.com or email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
And anything you have to say, we'll listen. Okay, I'm done. Are you done?
I am done.
All right.
We hope to see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Novel Ideas Podcast.